discuss shortly on the gambling issues. Right. Now, before we get started, I am aware that the Honourable Eustace Hazen was here hoping to just have a word with me, but we'll address that issue when we reach the apologies. For those members who have been requesting their attendance records, and that applies to all of us sitting here for SARS, I think the Secretariat regrets the error, and it would appear as if that was for the previous year. Mine myself was correct, but I got mine a lot earlier. So please check if you've received your so-called attendance register, your own record, check whether it is the relevant period. You do know you require that for SARS. Otherwise, you'll be paying back a huge amount of money for not attending work and being paid. Right. Now, members, can we have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? It is my intention to try and bring the meeting to a closure at 12:30 or earlier. Yes, Honourable McLaubal?
Excellency, Comrade Chair, I move for the adoption for the agenda.
Thank you, Honourable McLaubal. Can we have someone to second it? Yes, thank you, Honourable Tierko. Right. Yes, I wondered what that red light was down there. A red light generally means there's a mic on. Yes. There we are. Right. Now for apologies, can you give me the apologies, Mr. Medema? We have the Honourable Tlanguini from the EFF Party Business. The Honourable Eustace Hazen sits in two committees, and his other committee, I think it's Energy, is currently processing certain key legislation, and they need the quorum. That's Energy. Also, the Honourable Mantashe, who, as you know, the planes from the Eastern Cape have been cut down and sometimes cancelled without sufficient notice. She will be joining us during the meeting. Now, those are the apologies I have. I'm looking around at the DA if there's anything extra to add. The ANC? No. Yes, the Honourable Williams will be coming in a bit later. He's just dealing with the SARS matter. Thank you very much. On that note then, I'm looking at the department here. We don't seem to have any apologies in that regard. So we can go through, are there any draft minutes? There are. Right. Well, let's hope they won't be sent back. Where are they? Right. I think these minutes have come before us twice. They are now correct, I believe. They've gone through processes. Is that right? And they've been suitably amended in line to reflect what occurred that day. Thursday, the 7th of June, we had so many members present, very few apologies. And those were at page 1. Can you all please check the register that you signed against your attendance? Page 2. Mm-hmm. Thank you for maintaining the style. And the substance is now reflected correctly or accurately. Page 3. I do think, members, that these are minutes you may wish to keep with you as we move through the copyright in its final phase in the National Assembly. and then the adjournment. What? Right. We please ask someone to propose the adoption of the minutes. Yes, Honourable Khadebe, seconded by the Honourable Kachalia. Thank you. Wednesday, the 22nd of August, page 1. Page 2. Once again, for some odd reason, your memory or mind may have been at home, because from a very effective style in the previous minutes, you got what is called a more eclectic approach, with each point styled differently, you know? And I think eclectic approaches are fine in a more creative approach, not the minutes. Page 3. Update, progress made by DTI on the sugar industry. Please check the register against your attendance. Please try to maintain the style as you did on the 7th of June. Someone to propose the adoption. Honourable McLaubor, seconded by the Honourable Tiako. Right. Were you running out of ink on the 17th of October? I mean, you know. Right. Page 1. Page 2. These are also very substantive and important minutes, as you can see. Please keep them with the copyright. Page 3. I would like these minutes redone, so that we begin to follow one style and not five styles. Page 4. Just correct. Page 5. All the pages, you know, are numbered, which is really makes it easier for all of us. Page 6. Some members of the committee often want to go back, and the minutes are here to refresh our memories that we've done this work. That's why I'm asking you, please bring your minutes along with the legislation, all right? Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. On page 10, the end of 4.4, we then addressed those amendments that we had been looking at and the changes we had gone through in terms of, as I see it here, just to ensure, that looked like the protection of performers, didn't it? Yes. And then we came on to point 5, which was the formal consideration of the budgetary review and recommendation report. page 10. Page 11. Page 12. You will see on page 12 the third to last paragraph where the committee highlighted the NCAB that when it was finalized and signed into law, the resources would have to be reviewed. Page 12. Page 13. And then you have got the recommendations made there. Right. Those are very extensive minutes. Can we please have someone to propose adoption? Honourable Buyani, seconded by the Honourable Tierko. Thank you. October the 23rd, page 1, October the 23rd, page 1, check your registers, page 2, page 3. And you will see there that those were largely draft minutes that we dealt with. We please have someone to propose the adoption of that of those minutes. Thank you, Honourable Tierko, seconded by the Honourable Khadebi. And also that's the reference to the briefing on the incentive. And that's also worthwhile putting that in that file of incentives. Date 24th October, the Wednesday. Page 1. Please check the register. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Gold Rush, gambling. Page 5. What we're dealing with at the moment, so please keep them handy. We have someone to propose the adoption of those minutes. Somebody who was present. Honourable Tierko, seconded by the Honourable Buyani. Thank you. Now, we've gone to the 24th, which was Wednesday. We did have Friday, but we'll get them tomorrow, will we? Right, okay. Members, thank you very much. Thank you to you, Mr. Medima. Your minutes have really improved immeasurably. Really, thank you. All right, members, we now move to the agenda today, with, of course, the briefing by the DTI on the submissions received on the National Gambling Amendment Bill. I would like to acknowledge the DDG, Dr. Evelyn Masocha, right next to her. Ms. Caroline Congwa, the administrator, the currently with the National Gambling Board running it. Dr. Ria Nonyana Mokabane, Chief Director, Legislative Drafting, right. Ms. Millicent Zwimbani, Assistant Director, right, in Regulated Industries. Mr. Brian Arumugam, Senior Manager, Corporate Governance, thank you. Mr. Dennis Makari, Compliance Specialist, National Gambling Board, and Mr. Shelton Pagiwa, Gaming Technologist, thank you, National Gambling Board. Mr. Izetnkwatsi Mashamaite, okay, Director, Gambling Law and Policy. In attendance for the Chief State Law Advisor is the person here, Advocate Groot Boom. No, I don't see Advocate Groot Boom. Right. And here in attendance for the Constitutional and Legal Services Offices of Parliament, Mr. Imbolelo Ruda. Are they all honed up in some court or what? I mean, you know. Right. No, we are just informed by Mr. Hermans that they are on their way. I'm glad they didn't say around the corner, because we would have wondered which corner it was. But they are on their way, so I'm sure they'll be here any minute. Thank you very much. We are then going to ask a DDG for you to come in. It'll be up to you, you know, because you actually briefing us on the submissions received on the National Gambling Amendment Bill. Will you be doing that, or Ms. Kongwa?
Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning, honourable members and other stakeholders. We will be doing a joint presentation. I will start, and then the Ms. Kongwa will assist with the rest. So as soon as I'm done with my part, then she'll come and do the presentation from her side. The reason why we are here today as a DTI is to brief the committee on the responses that we are having on the presentations and the submissions that were made by stakeholders in the public hearings and in the written submissions that we have received. On slide 3 is just an outline of what the focus of the presentation is going to be. We will be taking you through the different sections of the slides. So those are the main focus areas. And just to provide a context before we go to the specific sections, the National Gambling Policy in 2016 was approved by Cabinet, and it gave direction for the gambling industry in terms of what are the areas and the proposals that should be in the bill. And the policy is not a law, and it sets out positions, and they can only be given force and effected in a law. And we would also like to highlight that there was extensive consultations that took place since the policy, and stakeholders were engaged in terms of the different positions that in the bill. And the bill seeks to legislate the thinking of government in terms of why gambling should be regulated. We do think that it is important that we have a regulatory framework that is effective, that is fair, and that is also protective. The stakeholders who made comments, we would like to thank them for the inputs that they made and for giving us insights and perspectives in terms of how the industry works. And we welcome this, because it is important that we hear what industry says, what other stakeholders are saying, because the legislative framework on gambling is for provinces, it's for national, and we really appreciate that everyone came to the party to indicate how they see the bill and the direction that government is going. However, we should indicate that it seems that most of the stakeholders, they focus on how the bill, the gambling legislation should be implemented. So there were many issues that we picked up that were more on the implementation side, not necessarily on the policy. And we think that there's still scope for us to build on the regulations and how the implementation is going to take place. The last bullet is very important on the slide, because we are saying that the underlying objective of the gambling regulation in South Africa is the protection of the punters, the players themselves. And the regulation of gambling is... The regulation is about the gambling and not about revenue collection, which is the point that the chair made in the last session, which we thought should be highlighted because it's very important. And I must add also on the context that South Africa is a very dynamic country, but we are plagued with significant challenges. Currently, we face socioeconomic challenges of high unemployment, poverty, inequality and slow economic growth. And overstimulation of gambling to the vulnerable society should be discouraged. We have low-income earners, pensioners who are dependent on, and others who are dependent on gambling. And as a responsible government, we should not be seen to be encouraging these activities because of the current and the continuous challenges that we face as a nation. And it is concerning that our provincial licensing authorities, they emphasize revenue maximization and exploitation of gambling opportunities over the protection of vulnerable South Africans and the welfare of our society, including animal welfare in some instances. I'm saying this because with the different modes of gambling, one of the modes that some provinces are proposing or promoting is on animal gambling, for example, dog raising. And they have significant challenges on animal welfare. And I think that should be highlighted. We don't talk enough about that. And there's a strong call by the PLAs, which are our provincial licensing authorities, to retain the current regulatory system, the status quo, where there is proliferation of gambling and where gambling activities are growing, where licenses are issued on activities that are prohibited by the National Gambling Act, and yes, for the revenue maximization. An example is on the issue of the National Lottery, where some provinces are licensing this activity, which is an exclusive national competence. And the same applies to other modes that the national legislation does not promote, but they also do. But then the underlying consequence is that the unintended consequence is on our societies, on our people who end up addicted to gambling, and problem gambling becomes an issue because of this proliferation of gambling. So this context is very important because regulators are there not just to maximize profits or revenue, but to also protect and to ensure that there is a responsible gambling environment for our vulnerable people. And we do think that strengthening oversight on gambling will ensure that there is responsible gambling in South Africa, and especially the protection of punters. I'm going to now go into the specific section of the bill in terms of where the inputs, most of the inputs came from. In some instances, we did try to highlight where the comments were coming from. Where we did not highlight, just note, most of these inputs came from the submissions and the public hearings itself. And please also, where you might find that in the presentation there are some typos or grammatical issues, please bear with us. We had to put this together in a very short space of time, given that we only finalized the public submissions and hearings on Friday. So just to say that, we respect this process and we think that it is important that quality is always observed. Okay, there was an issue around that in the policy document itself, the National Gambling Regulator was proposed as a trading entity. A trading entity would normally be an entity that operates within the confines of a national department. And although the policy made reference to the NGR as a public, as a trading entity, our policy position is that the NGR, it should be a public entity. So we do acknowledge that. The policy did stipulate that. However, our intention and position is to have the NGR as a public entity. And we must also add that this is not arbitrary. As a department, we did a process. There was a study that we conducted. We call it entity rationalization study or process, where we looked at the effectiveness of boards. And we also looked at what would be the best mechanism to manage the regulators within ensuring that there's streamlined activities, ensuring that there's cost effectiveness and efficiency. And one of the rationale is that a board is not necessarily, it's a board is effective, but depending on what a board does. For example, the issue of licensing. If the mandate is not related to licensing per se, you may have a regulator. But that, so with the rationalization study that was done, we found that it is best to have, we can have regulators that do not have boards. And there is overwhelming evidence across South Africa that shows that boards have challenges and the management of boards have been, the management of boards have been problematic and add significant costs to the fiscus and impact negatively on service delivery. And this we are saying because there were various comments that came last week that indicated that the way that we are proposing the regulator has not sufficiently been thought. One of the comments we received was that the NGR under the CEO will lack capacity and institutional legitimacy to execute its mandate, which includes lack of corporate governance, as too much power will be placed under a single individual with the risk of a power abuse. And also that having centralized power vested in a single individual is a challenge. And there were views that the board should be retained and competent members be appointed. And as our response, we are saying that the bill seeks to remove the concept of a board comprising various external members and replacing this concept with a governance led by a chief executive officer with the assistance of a deputy CEO. There is an underlying assumption that organizations governed by board members are efficient and effective. But as I've indicated earlier, there has been overwhelming evidence that shows that boards also have got challenges of different levels that impact on their effectiveness. And the issue around the powers vested in one individual, we want to say to that, as a public entity, the NGR will comply with the PFMA. It will account to the Auditor General like other entities as well as Parliament. And the entity will account at the highest level and there are no concerns with independence. So even though there will be a CEO, independence, we don't see it really as the major issue in this instance. Also, the other comment was that further, the oversight role will be compromised as a single individual will be interrogating decisions of collective authorities in the provinces. And as you are aware, the bill also proposes an ad hoc committee, which is there's an ad hoc committee that is being proposed, and the comment there was that ad hoc committees composed of suitably qualified professional persons has logistical challenges and costs. So basically here, they are saying that having an ad hoc committee has got its own challenges, logistical challenges and costs and so on, and also the issues around the probity of the committee members. And I need to highlight this on behalf of the NGB currently as being under the administration. It's under the administrator. This entity, as independent as it is with the administrator without the board, has for the past 4 years been able to achieve 100% of its performance target year after year, and has received a clean audit for the past 3 consecutive years. And we think that this is a clear indication that an organization can function effectively and efficiently in the absence of a board. I mean, these are very excellent results that even institutions with full boards sometimes struggle to achieve. And other similar entities with the structures include the Public Protector, the CIPC, the National, the NCC. I'm going to delete the NLC there because the NLC has a board. Excuse that. The NRCF and the Competition Commission. So this is not unique to the National Gambling Board or the regulator. And we would like to also add that the ad hoc committee will add additional governance measure to the NGR. And other entities have other PFMA-related committees, but not the committee that is more like an oversight. So we think that this will be an additional measure to ensure that the NGR is more effective. And there are entities that are functioning independently without such a committee, and they are doing very well. So we think that the proposal for the NGR is sound, and we think that it will be able to achieve its objectives. And we come to the next slide, which is slide number 9. That looks at the extension of the National Central Electronic Monitoring Systems to all modes of gambling. And the stakeholder comment there is that the PLAs provides and share information on the NSEMs. Information is not a challenge, as the policy highlights, and that there is no policy position that extends the NSEMs to other modes of gambling. So what we are proposing is that the system moves beyond the limited payout machines, but to other modes of gambling, which is a contentious issue to say, but why are we going to that extent? And just to give a bit of a background about the NSEMs, these systems, they provide a system that monitors payment of gambling levies and taxes. And in this instance, information becomes very, very critical. And credible and readily available information is central in the gambling industry. And there's a need to have an oversight over the information to avoid the risks to the integrity of data. That's one. The fair play for punters, because if there's no oversight, sometimes the games can be manipulated. So that's why we need this oversight. And the issue of credible gambling statistics is also an issue. Credibility can be achieved with the central monitoring system that is overseen by a gambling regulator who's at the national level. And another key issue is that some of the submissions last week were highlighting that information is readily available and information is not a challenge. And we would like to submit that information from the PLA is not easily accessible and received, and when it's received, it's based on relationship, meaning I need to know somebody to get information. And that's not how it's supposed to be. And another challenge is that there are delays in receiving data, and the quality of the information is questionable. And some of the operators are obstructive from what has been shared. They're obstructive when information is requested, and they also threaten with legal action. So there is hostility around this area that information needs to be provided for. And the provinces submit quarterly information late, and it is a regular struggle to get information required to prepare consolidated quarterly gambling sector performance reports. And what happens is that at times the auditor statistics have errors, then the NGB ends up losing time to correct that information. So you can see with this, if this information was in their control, it would be easier, and then there will be that validity and credibility of information. So we are saying that if the NGR has direct access to data for all modes of gambling by extending the NSEMS, then this will be eliminated, as the NGR will no longer be dependent on the willingness of the PLAs to provide that information. And we strongly believe that there is a need to have an independent entity coordinating this information. This will also ensure uniformity of norms and standards, because then there will be uniformity. Data will not be treated or handled differently across provinces. And the intention is to consolidate that credible information throughout the country and for all modes of gambling. And I must highlight this. The policy indicated that NSEMS will be extended to other modes of gambling at a later stage. So this issue is not new. There was an indication that this would happen later on, and we think that that time is now. And the other issue raised was that the cost of this process. There was a concern that the process will be expensive to establish, and that there is already existing infrastructure invested by the PLAs. And we would like to submit that this is a great step towards government's effort to implement the fourth industrial revolution. And investment in technology is a necessity to enhance the NGR's effectiveness as a regulator. So we think that this proposal will make the NGR more effective in the global context within which we operate. And we are saying that the existing systems at various gambling venues will continue to function as normal. We will not interfere with what the provinces are doing. The NSEMS is a national register as set out in the National Gambling Act of 2004. It is not intended to directly link to each gambling machine, example on the casino floor, but to the existing casino monitoring system through an application programming interface. And we are saying that this function will ensure that the NGR continues to work as a central repository of gambling information in addition to that which is already required in terms of the national registers. And it will supply, the output of the NSEMS will supply the PLAs, the manufacturers and operators with valuable intelligence. So we are basically saying here that there's value to have this function with the regulator. It will bring the developments in line with best practices, and it will also ensure that there is that information that is readily available to supply to other sectors as well, apart from just the PLAs. And furthermore, on the NSEMS, there were quite extensive inputs on this section, so it's a bit lengthy, but I think that it's important that we go through this so that because of the importance of this issue. Additional comment was that having a single NSEMS provider is not only uncompetitive, but it prevents variety. That the primary purpose of the NSEMS is for PLAs to monitor the payment of gambling levies and taxes. And also that it was established that to monitor, it was initially established to monitor LPMs. And casinos have their own electronic monitoring systems and in the provinces. So there were proposals that this system is linked to the PLAs, which have full access to the content of these systems. Therefore, generally, there's no need for the new system for casinos. So this was a view that for casinos, we don't need to extend this activity. And that to the extent that it is concluded, contrary to the submission, that the NGR should have access to casinos' systems, by linking up to their systems. And in response, we are saying that the proposed NSAMs will link to monitoring systems that already exist. So we are agreeing that there will be those linkages. And this will just ensure oversight. And the competition will continue to exist unhindered in the gambling monitoring space, as the implementation of NSAMs will not disrupt the current system. So we just want to highlight that the disruption that is foreseen will not happen. We will not interfere with the provincial processes, and that all the PLAs will have access to the NSAMs data and customized reports for any and all of their regulated, all their regulated modes. And in addition, we would like to highlight that the NGB has proven experience that the NSAMs has been able to report at least 99% accuracy of financial data. And that can be said for other modes of gambling where national oversight is lacking. So the proposed amendment to Section 27(6) to resolve this. So I think the question might be, why is this issue of information important? Information is so important because the statistics that you see about the performance of gambling and other stats is what gives us a sense of what is happening in the gambling sector. So in terms of slide number 12, I won't go into each item there. These were technical amendments proposed in terms of making it read better, or in some instances the order of the wording in section 27. And for all of them, we are saying that we noted the suggestions, but we think that the bill will remain as is in those areas. We did interrogate them, we looked at those proposals, and we think that as it reads currently in the bill, it is sufficient. Now I'm moving to the quorum issue, which is section 63A. Now it's slide number 13. So regarding the quorum, there was a concern about the coordination of meetings from the minister's office. Maybe just to give a context, with the quorum issue of the National Gambling Policy Council, gambling is a matter of concurrent jurisdiction between provinces and national. And there are many issues of policy and legislation that requires that concurrency and agreement between provinces and national in order to move forward. And because of that, certain decisions are hindered, certain activities do not happen if we do not have that consensus. And the quorum, others, I remember one time I made a presentation to one forum and I mentioned the issue around quorum, and the stakeholders were saying, but this is not an important issue, why are you even legislating a quorum? But given the magnitude of these decisions and the concurrency of provinces versus national, it is so important that we have this in our legislation, and that it should be binding and it should be taken very seriously. It looks operational, but it's a major, major issue. So one of the concerns raised last week was that the minister's office has poor coordination. There's no proper coordination of these meetings. And we decided that we need to just give a glimpse of some of the processes that we follow when we plan for these meetings. But at a high level, to indicate that since 2013, only two meetings correlated. Since 2013, only two meetings had a quorum. Two meetings. And then in terms of the round robins, we had 10 round robins since 2013 to 2018. And some of them were linked to the policy council, but others it was more when you need concurrency with other provinces, MECs, not necessarily for the policy council itself. However, there were 10. One of them, for example, was consultation on the gambling, national gambling policy in 2014. The other one was on the consultation on the bill, which was in 2016. And what do we normally do when we plan for these meetings? There will be a request from the minister for at least 3 days for his availability, and that will happen 2 months in advance to accommodate other procurement processes and so on. And once we have the dates, then we consult the provinces. So until the provinces have corrected, so let's say it's 9 of them, all of them are available. Once we know that we have a quorum, before we even make an invite, then that's when the invite goes out. Meaning that before we invite, we already have a quorum. And then we send out the invitation. And what we do in between, we'll have regular checks. So 3 weeks before the meeting, we check availability. They will say they're available. 1 week before the meeting, we'll do the same. And then even the last, until the last day, we check. What normally happens is that on the day of the meeting, that's when the MECs will not be available. Something will come up, or they will send officials. So some of this happens on the day of the meeting itself, and sometimes it has cost implications.
Just a minute, DDG. I'm going to appeal to all members to apply their minds to what has been said, because some members are utilizing their voices, others are twiddling with keys on cell phones. I really don't think we're applying our minds. This particular committee has been requested by stakeholders that everyone applies their minds, including the chair, not only the chair. Thank you. DDG.
Thank you, Chair. On the second slide, it's just, I'm so sorry, the font is very small, but this is just a picture of the different efforts we made on the meetings, and the green color is just to show where we did have a quorum, so that's twice. So this is just a scheme of what has happened with the meetings and where there were cancellations and where there was no quorum but there was a meeting, just to give you a picture. But basically the point is that this has not been effective and it has affected many things. And there were certain other comments that came, and I must say on these comments, if I'm not mixing the maths, I would say 90% of the stakeholders who presented were saying this. Overall, there was a general sentiment on slide 15.
Moment, DDG, Honourable Maslobo.
No, Comrade Chair, thanks. On these things of the quorum, probably on it's page, slide 14 on my, I just wanted to say, I could see it looks like we have three color codings. Are they meaning what? Well, the green, it looks like you said it did the meet. And then the others, what are they standing for? Because the font is
just the legend, please.
Yes.
The other color that looks a bit brown is where the meeting took place, but without a quorum. And then the one that is a bit pink is where meetings were cancelled. So the pinkish one is where the meetings were cancelled. The red is when there were financial implications. It was cancelled, and then there was money effect. There was a cost. There was fruitless expenditure. So this is the picture. And thanks, Honourable Maslobo, for that, because at least it gives a better context of what this means.
Yes, thank you very much. Let's proceed.
Okay. So I was saying that slide 15 gives a general view that came from the public hearings. There was a view that the NGPC must be disbanded completely. Another view was that the law must make it mandatory to attend these meetings, and that the proposal that we are making, that the majority of those available in the second meeting can take a decision, it was seen as undesirable to retain this section of decision taking in the second meeting. And this was by most of the stakeholders, and that there should be a round robin that can be utilized to make decisions. Or another suggestion was that there should be a veto or nominating a proxy for the meeting. And as I have indicated, that gambling is a concurrent mandate, there is a need for a legislated structure for policy making and regulation of gambling in the Republic. And on this issue, for example, you find that, right like now, you may find that there are draft bills in provinces. The national legislation says that, say, for instance, dog raising is prohibited. but you find that another province is allowing that in their legislation. Hence, we need that uniformity and alignment across government. And we are of the view that the fact that council is provided for in the law, it makes it mandatory. Maybe not in terms of you must attend, if you don't attend this will happen, but we think that because it's provided for, so to answer to that point that it should be made mandatory. And we also agree that we think that if we retain that section in the bill about the second meeting, it might serve as a deterrent. Because if you know that a decision is going to be taken that might impact on the province, yeah, and in your absence, even if there are two people, you will attend the meeting. We think that it might work. The very same proposal that has been requested to be moved might serve as a motivation to encourage attendance. So we really think that the portfolio committee should consider retaining this. It might actually change the current status of how these meetings are approached. The round-robin proposal, according to us, will not work. It has not worked in the past. We have tested it before. It is not a viable option. And we understand that different sectors may have different approaches to meetings. But from our understanding, even when you round-robin, there is still a need to formalize your decision in a meeting. I don't know, maybe that's different. But also, in terms of corporate governance, different institutions will have terms of reference of how they approach quorums, and that will be binding. So meaning that even if the committee was to adopt this, the bill as it is, it is still applicable, because then it will be like the modus operandi of the National Gambling Act when it comes to quorums. And there was, so I'm moving from the quorum to another section that will be in the bill on the unlawful winnings. There was a comment that the winnings should not be payable to a person who was a minor at the time of the relevant gambling activity, even if that person may have attained the age of majority in the intervening period. And we think that it's a responsible suggestion, and we are supporting that, because gambling for minors should be discouraged. So if you were involved in unlawful winnings when you were a minor, that proposal is sound. But then a major one is that there are some provinces that believe that the forfeiture of unlawful winnings must be paid into the provincial revenue fund, meaning that when the unlawful winnings that the NGR has worked around, that fund, that money must go to provinces. And this is because provinces have an inherent role of enforcing compliance by licensees who must promote socioeconomic responsibilities that include responsible gambling. And on that one, we are saying that the winnings were forfeited to the Revenue Fund of Treasury. So the National Gambling Board will normally undertake a process around unlawful winnings, and when they finalize the case, the money will go to the Treasury. But now we are saying that forfeiture of these funds to the NGR will be a source of additional revenue to increase the capacity of the NGR to address enforcement and illegal gambling activities and so on. And we also say that provinces have their own mechanisms to raise revenue. So we think that this funding must come to the NGR, because we have so many challenges of gambling in the country. So the stronger enforcer we have, the better for our gambling legislation. And on slide 17, we have a proposal that was made around the merging of the National Gambling Regulator and the NLC. This one, we are flagging it because we saw it. I think there were two other institutions that raised it. And the comment is that the Gambling Review Commission suggested that the NGR and NLC should be merged, and that there is a need for better cooperation and collaboration between the National Lotteries Commission and the NGR and the PLAs. And I must indicate this, because of the timing issue, this is one of the issues that as a department we needed to consult with the NLC about, just to hear their view, but we haven't had sufficient time for that because of the nature of the issue is a big policy issue. And another issue that was raised around this is that there is a big concern about the exploitation of bookmakers of the national lottery licenses that are licensed by the provinces. The National Lottery as an exclusive competency is under threat because bookmakers are making money from the National Lottery. They're not supposed to do that. However, the provinces license them. So because of that, it's happening. And so this issue was raised. It's not falling within the issues within the bill that are related to the NGR, but we thought that it should be flagged, but not to incorporate per se, just for the policy to note it, because the stakeholders came and indicated it. And there was another suggestion that the Register of Unlawful Gambling Operators should include the lottery license. And as the collective NGR, I mean NGB and the DTI, we are saying that this is a policy issue which was not considered even in the policy of 2016. So this is something that we haven't really interrogated, and we think that we can discuss it. It's more of a longer-term issue than a current issue, and I think one of the presentations indicated that it's a long-term issue. And we do agree that, I mean, lotteries is another form of gambling, and there is a need for coordination. And but currently the NLC and the NGB, they have an MOA. They have an agreement between them. They work together on issues of enforcement. But I know that there were other issues raised around the NGPC, NLC being part of the discussions and so on. And the issues of the lotteries, as I've indicated, around the bookmakers and the abuse of the lotteries, does not form part of these proposals on the NGR. But it is a serious gap, and as we foresee that it's likely to grow, because apparently those games, they pay more than the typical lotteries. They make more money than so meaning that they are making more revenue from this or more money from this, but they are not contributing as the national operator is contributing to the fund for lottery. But on this slide, what is here is a policy issue that needs to be taken out and engaged upon further. But we do think that there's a need to strengthen coordination and how we work together with the NLC from a gambling point of view. So this is something that needs to be engaged further on, which also talks to the issues of cooperative governance, where the comment was that the NLC should be included in issues of cooperative governance, dispute resolution, and gambling. So this is also an internal matter that we'll look into with the DTI and the NLC. So we think that these issues are noted, but for further consideration, some of them will be more at the implementation level, coordination level. So slide 19 looks at the functions of the NGR, and these are some of the major views that came through, that some of the submissions were not in support of proposed functions in relation to a broad-based public education program in relation to the risk and socioeconomic impacts of gambling, and that expansion of the reach of the national responsible gambling program will be preferable, funded by mandatory contributions by the holder of the national lottery license. So here it talks to the role of the NGR when it comes to education and awareness, even problem gambling, rehabilitations of problem gamblers. And we think that the NGR as a regulator must have its own education and awareness programs as well as the rehabilitation programs for problem gambling. And we do not see that role conflicting with the role of the NRGP. So the NRGP can continue with its functions mandate. And in fact, the scope of problem gambling is so huge that the more partners, stakeholders participate in this process, the better. So we don't see a conflict. We see this as additional measures. We need more measures in the country. So the more participants, the better for us. Still on the functions of the NGR, slide 20. The comment is that powers of National Inspectorate to ensure compliance of gambling institutions with gambling laws, it conflicts with exclusive jurisdictions of PLAs to conduct compliance-related inspections, and also that this duplicates the regulatory oversight. And so when it comes to this issues around enforcement, inspectorate powers of the NGR, the provinces are saying that why should we have the NGR also playing a part in that space? And we are saying that the gambling regulatory mandate requires oversight. Oversight is very important. There's a need for coordination and uniformity. PLAs have unique focuses, and there should be an overarching independent institution that oversees gambling in the Republic. I must give an example. Last month, I received a call from somebody who had a challenge with a bookmaker in the Free State. And the person won, but then there was a technical issue around the machines that the person was using, so they could not get their money. They indicated that they had to sell their house and use the money from the family to just make means, to go to courts, to try to get support from the province. So I was trying to explain the different jurisdictions of provinces and national, where the National Gambling Board comes in, where the provincial, and the person could not listen because he was saying he has nowhere to go. He went to the province, went to the premier's office, went to the regulators, and the only place he thought he could find support from was national government. So there are many people out there who are not having support from provinces for different reasons. That's why there's a need for oversight. So when you don't mandate the NGR to do certain things, you have these individuals who have nowhere to go for support. And we think that capacitating and oversight will create a regulatory environment that is fair to our punters who can have that protection. And we would like to also add that the NGR will not interfere with regulatory functions of the PLAs. In fact, it will strengthen current enforcement measures. And the other major issue that came from the comments was that the section that looks at the enforcement of this, okay, this will have an undesirable effect, but that the regulations of section 76A1E should be deleted, and that the provinces and, I mean, the national gambling regulator's role should be controlled because it may override the role of other regulators. And what we want to say is that the NGR will not override decisions or duplicate the functions of provinces. And intervention is very important. And we want to capacitate the NGR to have that enforcement capacity. And we note the suggestions that they're making, but we think that what we have in the legislation should be retained. And the remaining slides, Chair, is more technical legal issues. From slide 22 is proposals that came from the submissions and the presentations made, looking at what are some of the changes that should be in the bill. But I need to highlight one that talks to the issue of interactive gambling. In terms of interactive gambling, we have the National Gambling Amendment Act of 2008 that looks at interactive gambling. So several submissions or stakeholders were saying that interactive gambling is a law of the land, but currently we are prohibiting online gambling. And our response from a policy perspective, Chair, is that although we had a policy shift from 2008 to where we are now, we do not propose the repealing of the legislation because that's what some of the submissions are saying, that we need to repeal that legislation. And some are saying that having both the 2008 and the current policy position to prohibit is confusing. And we are saying that we note the concern, but we will look at a way of having that legislation without causing that confusion. For instance, it's not yet operationalized, and it will stay unoperative. So we think that the stance to sustain, to prohibit online gambling currently remains. We don't know what the future will hold, but where we are now, we are saying that we'll retain that stance, but we are also not proposing that we repeal the 2008 legislation. So the same applies. I think similar issues were raised around the inconsistency around this. So I'll skip slide 23 to go to slide 24. And there is a concern that with the role of the CEO, we are talking about having one or more deputy CEOs, and their suggestion is that it must be for accountability, we must just have one deputy CEO. So the law must be clear that we're talking about one deputy CEO, not at least or more than one deputy CEO. So we think that is a sound suggestion. And the Section 35, we are suggesting that it be inserted. It was omitted in the bill when it was published recently. Only the heading appeared in the bill. It pertains to the reporting of prescribed information by the PLAs to the NGR. So it's more of a reporting issue. So we just want to ensure that it comes back to the bill. And the wording of must, where on Section 65A, is just a wording, technical wording, just to add must instead of may. The minister may appoint, the minister must. So we think that is something that we can support. On slide 25, Chair, there was a suggestion that the role of the NGR...
Just a minute, just refresh our memories. What is 65A?
Just a minute, Chair.
Member of your team may have wanted to assist. I don't know.
It's fine, Chair. I'm there. Okay. It's where they say the minister may appoint. The minister may appoint a suitably qualified and experienced person. So the suggestion there is that instead of may appoint, it should say the minister must appoint. Yeah. It's just to strengthen it. It shouldn't sound like an option, but something that has to happen. And in slide 25, what we have there is about it's a suggestion for an insertion. They say that we need to add that the regulator must be independent and be subject only to the Constitution and the law, and they must exercise their functions in according to certain standards of impartiality, transparency and appropriate conduct and so on, and without fear or favor. And we think that that can be added in. We are proposing that it can be. So it's coming from the public submissions, but it's a proposal that we think might add to strengthening the governance of the regulator. And the other ones are similar to the one about the mask on 65A. For instance, 65A2 reads, it talks about designation. So, Chair, it reads as 65A2 reads as to be eligible for appointment or designation as a chief executive officer. So the suggestion is that we need to remove the word designation. So it's more those technical wording. For Section 65A3, the suggestion is that we must provide that a person who's convicted under the FICA is not eligible for appointment as CEO or deputy CEO, just to say that if the person is convicted under the FICA legislation, they're not eligible for appointment. And the other one is to say that we must remove the reference to the Corruption Act, as the Act has been replaced by the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. So these are just sections to strengthen, I mean subclauses, subsections to strengthen the what we already have in the bill. And on slide 27 is similar technical issues around the remuneration of the CEO. The suggestion was that the consultation must also happen with the Minister of Finance. So we shouldn't just, the minister should not be the only one consulted, but to also include the Minister of Finance. So the other one, it's about the wording that must be inserted or taken out, and we are saying that we'll review that and just ensure that the correct wording is taken into consideration. And on slide 28, we are looking at section 66A. This section talks to the intergovernmental cooperation between the NGR and the other provinces, and the wording there gives an interpretation that says that the department, the way it refers to the department is as if the department is the one that will be entering into agreements between the other organs of state on behalf of the NGR. So this was not the intention of the legislation, and we think that the word that must be there is the NGR instead of the department. So we think that that should be corrected as well. It's a proposal to replace department there with NGR. And the last one is on slide 29, where section 74 says that the checks drawn on the account of the NGR must be by two persons authorized for that person by the CEO, not the minister. So the thinking here is that we need to maybe allow for the minister to delegate. There was a suggestion that maybe it should be by the CEO, but then we think that it should be still by the minister, but the minister can delegate that function in case it becomes an operational issue. So we are proposing that the delegation element be added to that part of the section of the bill, just to strengthen that there is support when it comes to operational matters regarding this operational issue. And Chair, that's the I think my part on this on the slide is almost done. That's where I will request the CEO to come. I mean, the administrator. I'm thinking NGR now. Before the administrator will come and then give the context that they wanted to give, to just talk to how they see the implementation of the bill going forward. On slide 30, there was a suggestion that we need to talk to the qualifications of the deputy CEO and of the CEO in the legislation. And our response is that we will ensure, as a department with the entity, that suitably qualified people are put in place. But in terms of actually stipulating it in the legislation, we think that as it is now, it suffices. So that's the last one, Chair, and Ms. Caroline will come and give us the context from the NGB side on the bill.
If I'm looking at members, I think they would agree on that. We are scheduled to have a short tea break, but I suggest we have your input and then the tea break. Right, but let's move on then. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members and stakeholders present today. Our job is to give more or less a practical implementation perspective, considering the fact that we are the implementing agent for the DTI in relation to gambling. So our first, one of our mandates basically is to monitor gambling sector performance. So we may have shared with you these statistics, but we decided we would want, in considering the National Gambling Bill, we would want you to look at the statistics that we're going to present from the perspective of punter protection. It's something during the deliberations that has not been said. Punter protection in protecting those who gamble from the adverse effects of gambling is clearly spelled out in the National Gambling Act in our preamble, and everyone has been very silent on basically the effects or negative effects of gambling. We also see it as our responsibility to ensure that at all times in every decision making, whether it be policy consideration, legislation, as you are required to do, one always bears in mind to have to ensure that there's a balance between the economic benefits, which is revenue derived from the gambling industry, and the negative effects. So just to give you an idea in terms of the sector performance, I will have to read out certain values because the version of the PowerPoint on my colleague's laptop has deleted the values, but at least we have the total values there at the bottom. And we'll, I think after this, the presentation with the exact same values will be able to reflect. So just an overlook, you know, March ending 2018, we still had the casino sector dominating, followed by the betting industry, and followed by LPM industry and bingo, and totally we are looking at the gambling industry being approximately 28 billion rand industry. And then this is a depiction of the provinces, so at least the colors will also give you an idea in terms of what the outlook is. And then this is an indication, luckily here we have values of gross gambling revenue derived in the casino industry per quarter and how that has been volatile. And then the LPMs, which have more or less showed a steady increase till quarter four, where there was a slight dip. Bingo industry, that has also showed a steady increment through the quarters, that is for the past financial year. And bearing in mind that bingo is only made available for play in the Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal provinces only. And then this is an indication of the increase, specifically in the bingo area, which has been of keen interest to us as the national regulator. In terms of the split, ordinarily you'll be aware bingo was offered through the traditional bingo, the actual seats and the positions, till it was automated and we then had electronic bingo terminals. So we are just showing you how from the red line the electronic bingo terminals have depicted a sharp increment. And then this is gross gambling revenue in the horse racing industry and how the performance has been. So this is an overall picture over the years, and this shows you also that year on year the industry, you know, doesn't experience any loss. There may be volatility in various modes of gambling, but overall gross gambling revenue continues to rise. Now, having that in context, this is also just an indication of the casino industry, which is a blue line in terms of market share, and the trends in GGR and tax collected, which will be the lighter line, and how the different modes of gambling have been faring over financial year from 2010 to 2018. What that concerns us basically is turnover. So turnover basically is the amount of money that has gone into the gambling activities, and in certain instances is basically recycled. Now, if we have turnover in consideration, for us from a punter perspective, this is coming out of the pocket of the punter, but at the same time also from the winnings that the punter...
Just one moment, Ms. Congwe. What's been handed out now is just an update of what we should have had earlier. I'm sure everyone will appreciate that. All right? They are the slides that we've received earlier. Do carry on then. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. So, our concern being punter protection is particularly this perspective. We do acknowledge the industry should be viable from a gross gambling revenue perspective, and it is lucrative year on year. There's increase, and as of the past financial year, it stood at $28 billion. But however, we also monitor turnover, and since 2002, turnover was standing at $81 billion, and in 2018, it is $389 billion turnover that has gone into. So our concern and what it is wanted to share with you is the fact that in considering the gambling bill and ensuring that, you know, there's a balance at all times between the negative aspects of gambling and revenue generation, that honorable members consider that this amount of turnover also comes from various sources. It could be, for example, if you have a compulsive or addictive gambler, they may have perhaps pawned their car, they take out finance to further deal with their addiction. We also have research, for example, in the Eastern Cape, research that was done in 2017 that shows that 3% of pensioners actually gamble. Our research conducted by ourselves in 2018 also shows that from the sample that we did, 29.5% individuals who gamble are social grant recipients, and 32.9% are old age pensioners. So we are here just to reemphasize the fact that although the representations may have displayed and have been mostly driven by revenue and in certain instances even the amount of revenue that has been lost, but what we are saying is very little has really been said and focus made on what exactly is happening to the punter. So yet again on punter protection, and the embracement of technology within the age of the fourth industrial revolution, we totally support the bill as presented by the DTI, and we just wanted to have this last comment when it comes to technology. We support the fact that the fourth industrial revolution is here, and we, from our perspective as a regulator, we are saying that technology could be a good enabler for us to be able to further deliver and perform effectively the mandate that we're entrusted with. And we also trust that the NGR going forward would be able to do so. So there are certain aspects, for example, knowing who your customer is, if one is to draw from reforms in the financial industry. Within the gambling industry, as a national regulator, we know very little about the punter apart from, you know, information we draw from our research studies. We have, even as the National Gambling Board, the authority to set standards. But if you look at the financial industry, a lot of reform has also gone to ensuring that conduct of the financial institutions is managed by an authority. And that is how we translate what is being proposed in the bill, that the NGR is given enforcement powers so that it's better able to manage conduct. So we also agree with what DTI stipulated, that it is not enforcement powers that we are seeking to duplicate what provinces have, but to be able to deal with the issue of conduct. And conduct then impacts on on the Panther. Another example is self-exclusions. If we are not able to utilize technology, for example, extending the NSEMs to other modes of gambling, it's basically from those figures in terms of gross gambling revenue, just to take you back. We are then saying that it is only basically 10%, which is the LPM industry, that we can safely say, for example, tax is collected, there's accuracy in collection of tax, and we have a clear indication of what exactly is happening in that industry. So 90% of this revenue, we are not able to sufficiently account, and my colleague, Dr. Masocha, has also gone into detail in terms of breaking down the challenges and in terms of collecting that data. Then just to move on, from turnover, we were also just indicating basically or giving you an indication of tax that has been collected so far. But yet again, what we ask ourselves, because it is manually dealt with, can we actually say that we have an accurate reflection? With the collection of tax and other responsibilities we have as a National Gambling Board, and even if one is to draw, for example, in terms of FIC compliance, within the gambling industry, we have struggled basically even as provinces to comply in that respect. We recently had meetings with FIC where, in terms of their recent amendments to their legislation, or rather the FIC Act, they've actually deleted provincial gambling boards from having power to investigate and oversee financial transactions because there's been poor reporting. And what we are saying is, with embracing technology, we can at least enhance that. So it has been unfortunate that, provincial regulators then are viewed in that perspective by FIC because there's been poor reporting. And then also with regards to intervention on problem gambling, we also wanted to add the fact that with technology, and if we're to move certain lengths, would be able to get to know the Panther even better and deal with exclusion properly, effectively. Would like to also draw from the example of the unfortunate incident that happened at Monte Cassino, where we had a Panther commit suicide, and it was very difficult to actually get information on who the Panther was, whether he had been for counseling or to the National Responsible Gambling Foundation. And yet again, we are saying that as you consider the provisions of this bill, keep in mind that, you know, certain restrictions we have do have implications in as far as Panther protection is concerned, and we are here to say that it's actually the responsible issue to do. We can't be only driven by revenue, as has been stipulated by most of the stakeholders. And then, in closing, we just wanted to mention that actually the creation of the National Gambling Regulator will, and the proposed structure will improve efficiency, as we've set out and also given certain examples. Efficiency also, on that aspect, we draw from the example of our responsibility to monitor market share. And without technology and being given the ability to actually collect data or information which you can use as intelligence to better inform policy decisions or even norms and standards, then there are certain things that get slip out of the way. For example, from a market share perspective, even though we've had stakeholders making representations that, you know, for example, the use of technology wouldn't be necessary. There are certain trends that we see happening in the gambling industry. For example, we have, you know, the dominant player in the casino industry that has acquired the dominant player in the bingo industry and the second largest player in the LPM industry. Because little is known and we don't have the tools to monitor, and the reach is so far even from our enforcement capabilities, we are not able to catch or rather intervene in certain things happening. We are not saying there's an abuse of dominance, but we are just saying that certain trends show us in terms of behavior, market player behavior, which may pose a problem. And then the last issue also is on the EBTs and why we are saying that we would want to monitor. And this is the same model adopted by the LPMs. The LPM industry took about 15 years to get to 12,000 machines, and the EBT industry took about 3 years to get to 8,000. And there's no limit on the EBTs. There's no monitoring from a national perspective. And here we are just saying that certain market behavior or even from the PLA's perspective, if not monitored nationally where there will be no conflict of interest because we don't do any licensing, then certain things will get away and we will then not be aware exactly, for example, even how many machines or gambling machines we have in the Republic and which ones are legal. And then just in closing, we also think that what has come across as common from the comments is basically the fear of the unknown. But what we are saying is these will be allayed through further consultation where necessary. However, I think the responsible thing to do and is basically what the DTI and what we are supporting to set out to say. There's actually gaps and areas that we have not focused on, and you know, we're also saying that we have to avoid the risk of allowing self-interest to supersede national interest, as has been displayed in certain instances, and to consider the effect of society to be placed above commercial benefit, and this is at the moral center of government's existence, and we're also saying that the laws that are promulgated then should reflect this commitment. So thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
No, certainly you've I've learned a couple of extra things on this occasion. Very interesting. Thank you very much, Ms. Congwe. Thank you for that. Now, this seems to be the most suitable time for us to just go and help ourselves to a little bit of tea, etc. Sorry, there's something in here that's giving me the sneezes. It looks to me as if it is about 10 to. If we could be back by 12, please. Thank you.
Thank you.